America warns some 54 million U.S. residents currently face food insecurity. Mostly sunny this afternoon. Currently in Washington, it's sunny and 64. In New York, it's sunny and 61. I'm Askia Muhammad. Thank you for listening to WPFW Washington and WBAI New York.
And the previous program was Leonard Lopate at Large, which is heard Monday through Friday, usually at 1 p.m. It's now 2 p.m. Stay tuned for Neurodiversity Experts Speak with Natty Stay tuned for Neurodiversity Experts Speak with Natalie Tandyway here on WBAI New York. Stay tuned.
This is Natalie Tandyway. You're listening to the show, Neurodiversity Experts Talk, on WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio, streaming live in New York City online at WBAI.org. The term neurodiversity embraces differences in brain function and brain wiring as part of the expected diversity and variation in human beings. Neurodiversity Experts Talk features specialists in areas such as ADHD, autism, learning disabilities, and other neurodevelopmental-based differences. Our guest today is Joel Nigg, PhD, Professor of Psychiatry and Director of the Center for ADHD Research at Oregon Health and Science University in Portland, Oregon. He obtained his undergraduate degree at Harvard, an MSW at Michigan, and a PhD in clinical psychology at UC Berkeley. He is a licensed clinical psychologist and leading attention deficit hyperactivity disorder researcher, having published 200-plus peer-reviewed scientific papers. He is the author of the books, What Causes ADHD?, and the title, Getting Ahead of ADHD, What Next Generation Science Says About Treatments That Work and How You Can Make Them Work for Your Child. Today, he joins us on Neurodiversity Experts Talk to discuss ADHD and emotional intensity and dysregulation in adults. Welcome, Dr. Nigg. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
My pleasure. Happy to be here. Thank you.
This is exciting. Your Center for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Research at OHSU is a giant in terms of contributing to and shaping the field of ADHD research and understanding. The funding and research is actually quite significant. Why is understanding ADHD so important?
Well, it's important for a lot of reasons. I mean, I think one of the biggest is that it so often leads to secondary problems. It creates a huge likelihood that you're going to have problems with, as we'll talk about today, emotion and relationships. For some people, that leads to depression and suicide risk, addiction. All these problems multiply when ADHD is present. And so ADHD is kind of the root source of a lot of life problems. Something like a third of mental health and addiction problems can be traced back to ADHD. So it's a significant, with developmental problems, addiction, and so on being 25% of the total health burden in the world, then ADHD becomes a major factor in the world's health burden.
Well, I've never heard it explained like that. That's really interesting. It puts ADHD in a whole different light.
Yeah.
Thinking about that, society discusses and depicts ADHD as a pediatric condition. Is there such thing as adult ADHD?
Absolutely. And that stereotype of growing out of it has been around forever, and it should have been disappeared 20, 30 years ago. We first saw the literature recognize adult ADHD by 1970, but it hasn't penetrated social awareness even now, as your question indicates. But at least a third of children with ADHD grow up to have severe ongoing problems. Another third survive in life, but at great cost, at great struggle. And maybe a third or a quarter, I would say probably a quarter is better, will have no discernible, will actually kind of grow out of it. So I would say that the rough rule of thumb is at least half the kids with ADHD are going to struggle significantly as adults with ongoing challenges in this area of different ways of handling emotions, different ways of handling attention and organization, and all the related issues in adulthood.
That's really interesting. If you had to think of the top four issues, just big picture, that adults with ADHD often face, what would they be?
Well, certainly our topic today, anger and emotion problems, is I think one of the top issues. That has a spin-off secondary of relationship issues. The secondary is being disorganized and not being able to follow through on things. The third is not having the energy or the motivation to get started, to lacking initiative. When you want to have it, you want to do stuff, but you can't get yourself going. And then the fourth is the temptation to addiction. So I think those four probably stand out for adults.
And I'm curious, so we're looking at anger and emotional regulation. We're looking at relationship issues. We're looking at two kind of dimensions of executive functioning, which is organization or disorganization and motivation or inertia. And then we're looking at addiction. These are serious issues that can change the arc of your life.
They can change how long you live, and they certainly can change how comfortable you are in your job or in your family and financially. They can change how healthy you are.
Wow. I want to drill down on this idea of emotionality and emotion regulation. It's a term that we hear a lot. What does emotion regulation actually mean in like everyday person terms?
It basically means that your emotional reaction fits the situation when it's regulated. And when it's dysregulated, that's when you hear people say to you, "You're too emotional. What is wrong with you? Why are you overreacting?" And I'm sure many listeners that struggle with this have gotten tired of hearing that kind of feedback. The others, of course, we have the other side of the coin where people underreact. That's not usually the case with ADHD, but there's a group of people in this world that don't seem to show any response. Some of them are autism spectrum. Some of them, there's other reasons for that in terms of personality style or diversity. But it basically means that in terms of what's socially acceptable and socially recognized in your cultural environment, your emotional reaction fits the situation and it matches to what's going on. Certainly, if you start thinking about diversity of culture, you can say, well, that reaction would have been appropriate in your culture, Nathalie, but it wouldn't have been appropriate in my culture, or vice versa. But we're talking about something different than that here, where you can regulate it to the situation. Ideally, you can even adapt your emotions across different contexts. So you might be able to say, look, in my world, it's appropriate to react expressively to a story at dinner. In my culture, it's not that appropriate. But when I visit you or you visit me, I can adapt to that and I can modify how I react. So that's kind of a meta level of regulation where you can recognize that the context has changed. And so you're not just reacting appropriately to your historical context, but also to the new context that you're in. So that ability to modify how you regulate is kind of the meta level of regulation in terms of fitting the dynamics of where you are.
That's fascinating. I don't think I've ever heard it quite broken down that way. I have other questions bubbling up just from hearing such a straightforward definition. I want to come back to this idea about ADHD and emotionality, because those of us who are familiar with childhood ADHD, we hear about the emotionality in terms of oppositional defiance and maybe tantrums. So that those are incidents where we can see that dysregulation. How does that translate in adulthood? What are the kinds of flag incidents where we would see the dysregulation? Because most adults aren't accused of having tantrums or being oppositional, although it can happen.
Right. Yeah. So some adults do seem to have tantrums, but I think it's going to be experienced in two ways for adults. One is that the emotions are more intense in the first place. So I really am convinced that people with ADHD just experience their emotions more intensely than other people. And so they're trying to manage, in terms of regulating, a stronger input, if you will, a stronger electrical current, so to speak, than other people are. So they've got a bigger challenge. And that's combined with having, in a sense, less executive function to do it with and less attention to do it with, because attention is regulating as part. So that's kind of, so then what you see is that intense feeling. And then what you'll then experience is that the reaction doesn't fit the situation. You may not have hit a tantrum, but you spoke too loudly. You laughed a little too loud, or maybe you shouldn't have laughed at all. You stood too close. You misread the cue. There's these overreactions to things. They don't always have to take the form of a tantrum. They can take the form of being excessively excited even about something. So it may not even be negative, but it may not fit, and it may leave the people around you puzzled as to what's going on. But it does often happen, I think, probably in terms of concerning experiences. The biggest is overreactions of anger, where you will feel intense anger and it doesn't fit the situation. Before the show, we joked about the dysregulation we feel when the computer doesn't do what we want. We can discuss whether that's appropriate or not, what computers should be doing, because... But you can think about the cognitive framing then, you know, the world isn't the way it should be, and I can't stand that, and it pisses me off, and so I'm going to lose it whenever something isn't the way I think it should be. And so that kind of cognitive framing, that intensity, that difficulty with reining it in, because the mental thoughts then follow and kind of keep amplifying it.
Wow, you're giving us a lot. Listeners, I want to remind you, you're listening to the show Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Natalie Tandiwe on WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio, streaming live at WBAI.org. Neurodiversity embraces differences in brain function and brain wiring as part of the expected diversity and variation in human beings. Today's guest is Joel Nigg, PhD, author, professor of psychiatry, and director of the Center for ADHD Research at OHSU. Dr. Nigg is talking with us about adult attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and emotion regulation. Listeners, let us know what other neurodiversity-related questions, topics, and guests you want to hear about. Message question, topic, guest suggestions to ndexpertsinfo@gmail.com. N like neuro, D like diversity, ndexpertsinfo@gmail.com, or text 914-620-2995. Dr. Nigg, you have given us so much to think about, and you're helping us to understand what's under this idea of adults with ADHD experiencing emotional distress or having a consciousness that something is different about me emotionally when I compare myself to other people. And what I just took away from your breakdown is that, and I love the words emotional current, because you use the word electricity, you know, to think of this. It's very helpful because what you're describing is somebody who has maybe this narrow channel and a huge current of emotions coming through a narrow channel or circuit. And the emotions themselves that they're perceiving are actually larger than somebody who is regulated emotionally might have in response. So there's this automation part of it, or this intrinsic part that is perhaps beyond, it's sort of like how the person is built in that moment.
That's really a good point, Natalie. Exactly right. There is a very big automatic part of this. The parts of the brain that regulate emotion are not all conscious and deliberate. And so part of the regulation or dysregulation is happening before it even comes into awareness. And that's why this flood hits you of emotion. By the time you're conscious of it, it's already an overwhelming feeling, because in your brain, whatever is supposed to happen in the subcortical circuits before consciousness didn't happen the same way. And we can see that on brain scans.
But also what you talked about is not only are they having a more intense current with a smaller circuitry to handle it, they're having what people kindly describe as unexpected responses or unexpected behavior after the emotional response or reaction to the stimulus. And so I think that's where things, something that's on the inside is suddenly externalized mm-hmm. for other people to see and get a taste of what's, you know, the storm inside the person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where people are also struggling, because you can have your own internal struggle, but in interacting with other people and moving through different spaces, through school, through work, if you are explosive or you're somebody who is constantly exhibiting unexpected behaviors and responses, that can change the quality of your life and your relationships and your interactions with people and how people will receive you, and just how you'll be in a social system.
Very much so. If you're wearing your emotions on your sleeve, it's one thing if your emotions are more intense than everyone else's. A person with ADHD doesn't typically have the first reaction of, I'm going to wait and not say anything until I figure out how I feel. Usually it's, I'm going to figure out how I feel by letting it all hang out. And so that does create consequences, sometimes positive, but sometimes not.
I want to come back to, because you are a scientist, you're a clinician and a researcher, I want to come back to this idea that we need to hold on to, which is ADHD is a brain-based condition. So, and you've talked about little bits of science here and there, but just so that we can be really clear, what is the actual science and the actual pathway that's driving what we are experiencing as emotional dysregulation? Because you've broken down the sequence, but what's the science? What's structurally different in the brain?
Well, what we see in brain scans and what we know from neuroanatomy is that our perceptions of our environment hit the nerve centers in the brain, the thalamus, the amygdala, the subcortical structures. They hit these centers before they directly. In other words, there's nerves that go directly from the ears and the eyes to the thalamus and then come upward to the cortex. And so you're having your hormones are firing, your cortisol is releasing, your adrenaline is going, even before you're fully aware of what it is you're looking at. So this is part of why, for people with ADHD, sometimes intuition can be so powerful. It's a positive side of this. But on the other hand, the reaction to that intuition may be distorted or extreme because there's then a top-down process that is supposed to counteract this. So what normally happens in most people's brains is that there's a constant tension between the flow of neural energy from the frontal cortex, which is the regulating part, to the subcortical structures that are picking up the stimulus from the environment and from within the body. There's a tension there all the time, a dialectic that keeps things in balance. And what we see in ADHD is that those connections are weakened. And so that signal from the frontal cortex is not reaching the subcortical areas as well. And that's why that signal, that current, is coming through so strongly. The buffer, the regulator, the capacitor, whatever analogy you want to use, just is weak or different. If you don't want to use a pejorative term like weak, it's different. There's less signal there.
So in a typical functioning brain, describe that sequence. Like, you have this strong frontal cortex. That person gets this stimulus, this negative emotional stimulus. What happens in that more neurotypical brain?
The neurotypical brain, just as that strong negative signal comes through, other signals are also coming from the memory part of the brain, the top of the brain, saying, I don't want to lose my control. I don't want to offend this person. I don't want to hurt this person's feelings. These other goals come to mind quickly and counteract the intensity of that emotion. Again, this is all subliminal. This is not necessarily all conscious. So you'll find yourself inhibiting your response even as you're feeling it in the typical brain. But of course, and again, it won't be as strong in the first place because those dampeners will have happened earlier on as well. But I think in people with ADHD, what often happens is those other goals are just forgotten. This gets back to the attention piece. And so that emotion just floods and takes over awareness.
So if I'm understanding this correct, we have a negative stimulus this is the scenario in the neurotypical brain. The negative stimulus, the frontal cortex region of the brain perceives that. And because it has regulating capacities, it will begin to apply brakes.
Yes.
To inhibit the type of response. It's almost like it's trying to shape a socially acceptable response.
Exactly. It will apply remembered rules for expression. And again, it will do this automatically to some extent. It will also apply preliminary goals. So one of the coping things I'll talk about that's in the literature is anticipating what's going to make you triggered. Because if you're carrying in mind a memory of what you think is going to happen, a memory of the future, so to speak, that automatically helps modify that emotional reaction. I knew this was going to happen, so I'm not surprised. And I'm now going to react the way I plan to rather than being thrown off my horse. So that's those kind of little tricks can help that frontal cortex do its job.
So in that neurotypical brain, negative signal, frontal cortex applies the brakes and is tapping into a matrix of social thinking, basically, to kind of figure out what's going to be a socially acceptable response and beneficial for future you. What's happening with the cortical structures?
In the neurotypical brain, they are quickly becoming conscious of your goals and applying those to further modulate your response. So you can think about this in both in terms of socially acceptable, but also survival. On the child side, you know, I've seen tiny children go and really get in the face of a dangerous, angry, unknown teenager, and put themselves in great danger. I've had to intervene to save little kids in that situation on the playground. And then adults will lose it to the face of their boss and lose their job when that isn't in their self-interest. So in the neurotypical person, they'll have the reaction, they'll feel the anger, and they'll think to themselves, all right, I'm upset, I'm angry. But they'll quickly become conscious that this is my boss. I want to think about how I'm going to respond before I respond.
Interesting. Listeners, this is 99.5 FM radio, WBAI.org. I'm Natalie Tandiwe, bringing you Neurodiversity Experts Talk with guest Joel Nigg, PhD, author, professor of psychiatry, and director of the Center for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Research at OHSU. Dr. Nigg is talking with us about adult ADHD and emotion regulation. So you're really teaching a lot today, and I'm so glad you have this really strong, like, clinical and research background, because it's so important for us to understand that there is a science behind neurodevelopmental conditions, because I think it also gives us greater empathy for ourselves and others when dealing with ADHD and relationships, and just kind of trying to facilitate, you know, how to move forward with these aspects of the condition. Given the neurobiological aspects of emotion dysregulation in ADHD adults and psychological dimensions, what relief can medication offer?
Well, this is a great question, because one thing we've seen is the typical treatment for ADHD, of course, is stimulant medication, Ritalin, and so on. We are seeing in the literature for children, and this is beginning to show up in adults. There's unfortunately, a lot less trials on adults. But going back to what we talked about earlier, the stereotypes here about adults don't have these problems. The stimulants they're great on attention. They don't do great on anger and emotion. They really only give you a partial response. And so you'll see kids and adults with ADHD, and I've heard this from adults with ADHD. Yes, I'm taking my stimulant. My attention is better. My focus is better. My emotions are kind of better, but they're still really a problem.
And that's
really the case. The studies confirm that.
That makes a lot of sense when you break it down that way. So what, just run us through bullet style. What are the tools that adults can reach for if you are doing all you can on this medication and supplement level to address your ADHD and treatment, but you're seeing this emotional dysregulation as something that you want to work on and you want to have transformation in? What are some of the tools, just bullet them for us, that we can reach for?
You bet. Well, first of all, let me say another word about medication. There is some evidence now, and it's only a trial in children, so we need to see the same data in adults, that if you add a SSRT, a stimulant, antidepressant like Prozac or something, that you will get a stronger response on the anger and emotion, the stimulant plus. So there is some evidence there that the combination, and this goes to the question of whether the anger and the dysregulation is also mood related. There's, as I'm sure you're aware, Nathalie, from our previous discussion, there's a close relationship between anger and depression.
And anxiety.
And anxiety and anger, exactly. And so, and this may be a little different for men and women in different ways, but the behind that anger is often a lot of negative feelings about oneself, or negative feelings about the world, or negative feelings about the past or the future. Sometimes there's even a history of trauma or abuse. And so behind that is all this sadness and depression as well. And so this is why there's a theory that the antidepressant medications may actually help even with the anger.
So we get to that bullet list. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
If we move out of the medication zone into other tools, give us a bullet list of what kind of tools we can reach for.
You bet. So first of all, I'll do a list of professional therapies and then a list of self-help stuff.
Okay, great.
So on the professional therapy side, there's a group of therapies called third generation therapies that blend the best of earlier treatments like cognitive behavioral therapy with what we're learning about mindfulness and self-awareness and its value in therapy. So for people that have had a trauma history, there's a treatment called trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy. There's another therapy called acceptance and commitment therapy that's a spinoff on mindfulness-based. There's a mindfulness-based cognitive behavior therapy. These are great psychotherapies for building the tools and the self-awareness to manage emotions. You can apply some of the techniques of these therapies yourself. There are self-help books, and we can get these resources out. There's a couple of self-help books out there that are really good on applying these tools to yourself. But in terms of self-care, you've got some of these meditation tools. The kind of punchline is recognizing that you're having your emotion. You're not your emotion. And so kind of like it's not that I am my emotion. It's that I'm having my emotion. I am somebody bigger than my emotion who's having experience. And that allows you to observe the emotion and to respond to it in a number of ways, depending on what your goals are. And so the meditation tools, either in self-help or in therapy, help develop the ability to do that. So there are different tools you can do if you're wanting to apply meditation tools. And this really is learning to focus your thoughts, focus your breath, or even just focus on tapping your fingers on the table to get your mind into the moment and off of all those other negative thoughts that are driving you into the emotional overload.
Amazing. Anything else in addition to meditation?
I think humor is a great one. exercise is a great one. Self-forgiveness is very important. And forgiving others is very important. I think one of the reasons that we get angry is we're carrying resentment and we're resenting the people and the world for not meeting our either spoken or unspoken expectations. And forgiving that, and sometimes that means forgiving God, is a long journey. It's hard, but it's a resource there for those that are interested in a spiritual or religious route that can help with some of that forgiveness side, but it can also be worked on through therapy and self-awareness. I will also say that sleep and diet, it's worth remembering that a lot of people with ADHD are not sleeping well. This does not help emotion regulation.
It really doesn't. I'm so glad you brought that up.
And so looking at how am I sleeping? Can that be addressed medically or through different habits? What am I eating? Am I eating healthy? Because if you're not eating well and your gut doesn't feel good, that does not help you regulate your emotions.
This has been amazing. You've given us so much to think about and so many tools. Listeners, you've been hearing Neurodiversity Experts Talk with Nathalie Tandiwe on WBAI 99.5 FM, listener-supported radio, streaming live at WBAI.org. Ooh, today's guest Joel Nigg, PhD, professor of psychiatry and director of the Center for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder Research at Oregon Health and Science University. He's a licensed clinical psychologist, leading ADHD researcher, and author of the books What Causes ADHD and the title Getting Ahead of ADHD, What Next Generation Science Says About Treatments That Work and How You Can Make Them Work for Your Child. He's online at ohsu.edu. You can just enter the term ADHD Center in the search bar and you'll jump to his page. And today he joined us on Neurodiversity Experts Talk to discuss ADHD and emotional intensity and emotional dysregulation in adults.